Okay. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. Okay. This is a Swepisode. If you're new here, I'm going to do my, Emily is like, Kaylin loves saying this. If you are new here, So What Else is a podcast where we have interviews like we had last week with Joey Odom, which was awesome. And then we also have things called Swepisodes, which are when the four of us sit around like roundtable-y discussion. It's me, my husband Scott, my sister Emily,
hello,
and her husband Matt,
hi,
who is the producer of this podcast also.
Maddie Carps.
So these episodes are usually like lots of laughter and fun and goofiness and blah. This is going to be a slightly different episode. So if this is your first Swepisode, this is not the normal vibe.
Yeah.
Just so you know. But basically, you may or may not know. If you follow me on social media, of course you know this. If you listened to last week's episode, at the beginning of the Joey Odom episode, we have like an intro where I explained what's been going on with my family. But basically, on August 27th, so about 3 weeks ago, Emily and we have another sister too, but I just mean we're in this room together. Yes. Mm-hmm. Emily and my mom passed away from cancer. So that is why the podcast has obviously been like we had some weeks off and then on, and it's been confused. Like, it's just kind of been like an inconsistent flow for obvious reasons. We just kind of wanted to take tonight to give a little bit more clarity, because I do think people are like fuzzy about the details and feel funny asking, but like whatever. So like just kind of give a little bit of clarity about like what exactly happened, and then talk a little bit about like how we're processing and coping and like things like that.
Hmm.
Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, this is obviously a 2.5 year story that I'm about to tell. I'm not going to give all the details for time's sake. So like, and also like the minutia details are important to us, but like, we're just going to give like a high level thing. So basically I'm going to bring us back, and obviously you guys in this room cut in whenever. Okay. So 2.5 years ago, more than that, February of 2021, COVID was still going on. It was a whole thing. Mom was sick for a while, went to a, doctor, got diagnosed with COVID. So we were all quarantining for a week. Then she had a night where she was incredibly sick. She had a headache that was like completely unbearable. She was like vomiting uncontrollably, borderline fainting. The pain was like unbelievable. It was a whole thing. She ended up getting to the hospital after like a lot of drama. She was able to get there. And again, COVID, so she was alone. They did a CAT scan and found a huge mass in her brain. She was then airlifted by helicopter to a different hospital. She had brain surgery. She was released from the hospital. She came home. She was doing well. It took a while to get the pathology, like several weeks, which honestly, like if you're listening to this and you have, and you knew, and you've known someone that's had cancer or whatever, like you realize it is so much waiting.
I think it was 10 days.
Okay. 10 days.
And it felt like
12 weeks.
Yeah. It's like because you think it's going to be like blood work. Like, okay, like you go get your blood drawn and the results are usually in your portal in like 48 hours. Like, you know what I mean? But it's like biopsies and things like that. Like, it just takes forever. Yeah. Like, it just, and because like there's things called like the tumor board where like a bunch of people have to like sign off that they agree on like what they're looking at. It's just like a whole thing. But basically the pathology came back that, cause you know, we were obviously clinging to hope that this massive like mass in her brain was like going to be miraculously benign, you know? Right. It came back that she had a glioblastoma, which is like a very aggressive brain cancer. Which was like the worst news. It's, you know, if you Google glioblastomas, the information is not positive that is available. Like the
prognosis.
The prognosis is never not good for anyone ever. Yeah. Like
it's, what was it? Like less than 3% actually make it past 5 years.
Okay. I didn't even know that something exact statistic, like, but that sounds right. That. Okay, maybe I did.
Yeah.
But usually like 6 months to like a year, right?
Yeah.
Typically less than 6 months.
It's like very, very quick and terrible. So obviously that was like the absolute worst news ever. So this is back in February 2021. We were able to, and you know, then you have like Mount Everest to climb in front of you because you have to then decide what you're going to do. Like the doctor who did your surgery will say things like, okay, like at this hospital, like we can do chemo and radiation or whatever. But like, if you do any bit of research, you find out that cancers like this, like a glio, you know, your only shot at any long-term survival is to get into a good clinical trial. Mm-hmm. But clinical trials, it's not just like, you don't just like sign up. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole thing. Like different hospitals have different trials and you can only get into it if your tumor has this exact thing or if you're in this age group or if you're in this blood type or if you're like, there's so many things and then don't even mention insurance. I mean, then that's a whole other thing. Like, it's just like, it's an actual like mountain to climb to even find a clinical trial that could be good for you.
And you don't know how much time you have, which is like,
exactly. In any normal circumstance, you know, like if you're buying a new car, you're like, we did research for months and we test drove all these different cars and we thought about it. And it's like, when you're dealing with something like this, you're like, we're racing the clock.
We need to know tomorrow.
Yes, exactly.
Like where we're going and what we're doing.
100%. And then it's like, you know, thank God we live somewhere very close to New York City. There's people like, if you live in the middle of nowhere, you know,
I don't know what you do.
And you're not close to a major hospital that has trials available to you and you don't have the means to travel there, then you don't have this as an option. You don't, you know, and like, that's like really frightening, you know? Anyway, in New York City, there's a hospital, Lenox Hill. There's a doctor there, Dr. John Buchvar. He, like had a Netflix show where he was featured on like, and his work that he does with glioblastomas. We had a connection to him because my dad's cousin's daughter's husband had a glioblastoma and Dr. Buchvar was his doctor. So we were able to get in with him like fairly immediately. And mom's tumor was the exact, you know, whatever qualifications like for the clinical trial that he was doing. So she was able to get into it. So basically she did like regular chemo and radiation through the hospital here in New Jersey. And then she enrolled in the clinical trial in New York City, which consisted of like three different, not like surgeries, but like kind of like she was put out.
Intra-arterial. They were feeding chemo through like a artery in the, her, like her groin, and they fed it up into her brain and they delivered chemo into her brain cavity where the tumor was through that catheter. Because a lot of chemo does not cross the blood-brain barrier. Right. So they have to deliver it directly into the brain cavity.
Thank you.
The tumor cavity, whatever.
So yeah. So that's what, so she did that three separate times. It was like, they were like 2 months apart each or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was doing really well and she had clean scans for a long time. For
like 9 months or something?
I want to say it was February to...
It was like October.
It was a long time that she had.
October of the next year.
Yeah
it was the October of the next year was the first time that she had a recurrence.
So 2022.
So yeah. So then October 2022, is that right?
Yeah.
She had a recurrence, which basically she was going in for MRIs every 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just constant. Like she would go in, they would do the scan. They'd say, oh yeah, look, still looks clear. Oh, and I just want to backtrack and give a little clarity on a glio. So what some people don't understand is like with a glioblastoma, it depends, and I'm not a doctor. Okay. So this is like layman's like understanding of this. Some people, when it's discovered, it's like inoperable because of however the tumor is. A lot of people though, like my mom, it'll be operable. Like her tumor was actually placed in like a good spot where it wasn't like too dangerous to operate. And it would like, was easy to get, you know, good margins, whatever they say, all that stuff. But the thing about a glio is that they know that there are essentially mini tumors. There's like little cancerous cells spread throughout the brain that are invisible on an MRI.
I think it's because they can't take margins on a brain tumor because then they're cutting away the brain.
Okay.
And then that's not good.
Correct.
So there's all these cancerous cells that have seeded throughout the brain that are, you can't go in and get them all. They're cells. They're microscopic. Right. So they have to then treat after they take the tumor out.
Correct. And so like a glio, like no one will ever say you're cured.
Never.
You're in remission. No. They won't say you're cancer free. Like if you have one, you will have one for the rest of your life, even if you're doing really, really well. And mm-hmm. even if you have no symptoms whatsoever, they do know that there are cancer cells in your brain. Like right.
which
there
was
are.
Her case. Which she was her basically case. Asymptomatic.
For a long time. Mom was truly, truly like, and like her doctor would say this to her, like you are on the far, far end of the curve of how well you're doing, how well you've responded, how well, how good you look. Not like in a vanity thing, but like
you would look
at her and not know there was anything wrong with this woman.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like for sure. She didn't have any like cognitive issues, like, you know, none of that stuff.
Mm.
So then she had a recurrence in October, and that was obviously like very crushing. She ended up having surgery. They took it out. And when they took it out, they inserted radiation seeds into the cavity where they took the tumor out. So we couldn't get within 6 feet of her for like 30 days or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And I was pregnant with Peach at the time. So it was like really, we were worried about it, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was last October. So
we're coming up
on a year from her recurrence and when she had that surgery and all that stuff. So after she had the recurrence and the radiation seeds and all that, she
was doing well
again. Like there was really no problems. She started losing weight. There was like weight loss, but you have to remember she was never like not on any meds. Like throughout the whole 2.5 years, she's been on like a lot of different meds because even if it's not chemo or radiation, there's like other things that they're treating, right? So one thing is that she was on metformin, which is like a diabetes drug. It helps like your blood sugar because my understanding is that people that have like brain cancers, whatever it is, your body has trouble regulating its blood sugar. So like I remember for a while, mom was eating like literally no sugar and her sugars were still high when she would get blood work done just because like her body just like couldn't metabolize or whatever, like whatever it was. So it's like she was on this metformin drug and like a side effect of that is weight loss and lack of appetite. And so like that appeared to be why she was losing weight.
That's one of the things that's so difficult with cancer is it's like you're fighting the cancer and then you're fighting the treatment for the cancer.
100%.
And then you're fighting that treatment. It's like
100%.
So intensive.
And, you know, I mean, she presented a little better than she felt. Like, obviously, she was tired. Mm. She struggled in the mornings. You know what I mean? Like, she felt very fatigued in the mornings. She did battle, like, nausea here and there, but never like she couldn't get out of bed today. It was just like, oh, like she was slow going today. You know what I mean? Like, wouldn't you say, Emily? I don't know. Yeah. Like just like she didn't feel great, but she had cancer and was on a lot of meds for it. You know what I mean? It was pretty.
Yeah.
She was still doing amazingly well considering the situation. You know, she's a 65-year-old woman. She had been through 2 intense brain surgeries, chemo, radiation, and those 3 intra-arterial things. Like it's a lot. To a body to go through. You know what I mean?
And 4 kids.
And no kidding. And she had birthed 4 kids. Like, you know what I mean? It's like.
Yeah.
So then in June, she spoke at a summit like for glioblastoma, like research. And, you know, she spoke as basically an example of someone that was like doing the clinical trial and like doing amazingly well. And that was in June. And then. Okay.
This is where I get fuzzy.
This is where I get fuzzy too. The summer was confusing. Basically, at some point over the summer, I remember now. All right, hold on. Memorial Day weekend, she was away with my dad. She came home and like the next day she fainted, which was like very strange for someone to just faint out of nowhere. So she fainted. She immediately went to the hospital. Dad took her to the ER. They ran blood work. They did a CAT scan because, of course, she fainted. Everyone's assuming, oh my gosh, like her tumor's back.
Right.
They did a CAT scan. There was nothing. Took blood work. It was good. They told her to follow up with her doctors, which she did. She followed up with the New Jersey guy and Dr. Bookvar. And then they also asked her to follow up with a cardiologist, which she did. And she wore this like heart monitor thing for like a week,
like
or something,
a week or something.
And everything came back normal. No issues. But she struggled to feel okay after the fainting. The fainting was a turning point in my mind for sure. There were some days she called me, in the weeks after that and would ask me to come by because she was feeling borderline faint again and was nervous. And so I would go by and be with her. So, you know, she wasn't feeling good after the fainting thing. But again, like follow up with all the stuff. And we thought, you know, it was like really hot this summer. And then there was all those air quality issues and whatever. Remember?
Forgot about those.
And we were like, I think you're just like not handling the heat well. I think, you know, this, that, whatever.
And also you're on a ton of medications.
Exactly. And again, you do have brain cancer.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like there's no reason at all that you would maybe not feel great.
Right.
You know,
and
like
it's also the, not just the physical aspect of having cancer.
Correct. Yes.
That we had to take into account, you know, like if you have a brain cancer that is eating away at your brain, like what that does to you mentally, not
emotionally
in your brain, emotionally.
Yes.
I mean, depression, anxiety. So we had to take that into account, which is what we were doing.
100%. Like thinking like, you know, it's also possible that it's just been a long time of fighting and, you know, anxiety before every scan and all that. And like that could be really wearing on her, you know? And so these were all things, you know.
She went a long time without symptoms. So it was like,
yes,
okay, here are some symptoms.
Correct. It just kind of felt like, okay, well, all right, some symptoms. Yeah, like that's allowed. You know what I mean? So then at some point over the summer, she went for like her regular MRI. I can't remember if they did it. I think they may have done it sooner than she was due for it because she wasn't feeling well, but I might have that wrong in my head, but it doesn't matter. The point is,
I think they did because of the fainting.
I think they scooched it up from the fainting. Yeah. They were like, let's just do your MRI sooner than you're due for it, just to make sure.
Right.
And so they did the MRI and then it came back and they didn't say there is a recurrence. They said there's something on the scan.
But we don't know what it is.
We don't know what it is. It's supposed to light up some color if it's cancerous and it didn't do that. And so they were like, they just kept calling it a spot.
Right.
There's a spot. There's a spot there. Yeah. We're not sure that, you know, Dr. Bookvar looked at it too. He also said, can't tell from this inconclusive what this is. So then they decided to follow up with a PET scan, which actually tests for cancer. But again, you know, I'm sure everyone listening to this is thinking like, oh, and then she had the PET scan the next day. No. It takes like 3 weeks to get in. You know what I mean? Because that's just how the world works. You know what I mean? So, you know, she went in for the PET scan and it was not a full body PET scan. We thought it was, but it was from like her
chest up.
And then those results took forever to come back. And then they finally came back. And then the results were that the spot was positive for cancer. But again, it wasn't some kind of big tumor. They kept still saying like,
it was very unclear because each doctor we spoke to was like, we're pretty sure it's the tumor's back. Whereas last time with the recurrence, they were like, the tumor's back.
Yes. They were like, here is a new tumor.
So,
but this time it was very, very fuzzy.
Very
wishy-washy. It appears to be cancer cells. It could be a new tumor. It could also possibly be necrosis from the other surgeries and the radiation seeds. Like there was still a lot of like, not totally sure.
And then
there is something wrong. They did agree there's something wrong, but no one was like fully committal to like how.
But then they ended up landing on it's probably a recurrence, so we should go in and get it.
Correct. So then Dr. Bookvar, we had a meeting with him and Emily and I sat in. Mom and Dad used to do all the, you know, appointments themselves, but Emily and I sat in at the meeting and it was like on Zoom and he basically laid out a few options. And the only option that was actually a good option was to do a surgery where he goes in, he takes out the recurrence, whatever it was, mm-hmm. like, and then removes fat from her abdomen called omentum and inserts that into the brain cavity because it has healing properties and things like that. Now, that's actually like a surgery that they do a lot for people with like different kinds of cancers. Like he said, like women who have had like breast cancer or something
people
else.
People with who have strokes.
Strokes. They yes. And so, but she would have only been the fourth glio patient mm-hmm. to have that surgery done.
Mm-hmm.
So she decided to do it, which was like very brave, obviously, you know, and they scheduled it for August 9th. So she goes in. She was then getting sick. The week before the surgery, she was getting sicker and sicker and sicker, just weaker and weaker and weaker, and
didn't want to eat,
nauseous, couldn't eat. All the things. And like it, a few days before she went in the hospital, she went in on like a Wednesday or something like that. She went on Tuesday, yeah. Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I was at the house with her all day because dad had to like get work stuff. He had work meetings that he had to attend to because he knew he was going to be out because mm-hmm. she was going to be having surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And like you and Kara were obviously working and she was sick enough to where none of us felt comfortable with her being alone.
Yeah.
Cause she was very weak and it just felt like, I'm nervous she's going to faint. I'm nervous she's going to like something. Did you want to say something?
An interesting part there that like you're kind of skating around is watching you guys throughout that process. It was this guessing game of like, wait, she's getting really sick and she's really weak. What's going on? Like you were saying, is this depression? Is this, is she sick? Is this what's happening? And then not having like tests to rely on, there was so much like trying to figure out in this midst of whatever, seeing signs of stuff, but having no clue what that was. Like, oh, is this what brain cancer does to you? Like it causes you to like,
oh, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that because we actually asked Dr. Bukvar that. Duh. Thank you for bringing that up. When we were in that meeting where we decided on the surgery, the omentum surgery, we said to him, she's really sick. Like, what do you think? And he was like, and he said, your brain scan is not that bad. Like he was like, whatever this recurrence is, shouldn't be making you feel this sick.
He said, from what you were telling me, I thought your brain was going to look a lot worse.
Yes. He was like, I was actually pleasantly surprised when I saw this recent scan because from what you were telling me about how you were feeling, I thought it was going to look really bad, but the scan doesn't look that bad. And so he was like, here's the deal. You are officially a long-time survivor of a glioblastoma. Mm. And the longer people live with glios,
stuff happens.
The more stress has been put upon your
body.
And
the more side effects.
There's
more
side effects. You're on the drugs longer. There's just things.
You're kind
of
in like a no man's land.
And like there's not really research about it. Yeah, like there's not long-term survivors of glio, so there's really not research on it.
She was in uncharted territory.
She was, pretty much. She 100% was.
Her results, I'm sure, will go back into that testing. Like, okay, well, this patient who had made it one of the longer patients to make it with a glio, then develops this, like now we have to watch for that.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
That's going to be.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, going into the surgery, like she was definitely getting sicker and it was like, it was for sure like emotional to see, like it was hard to see, like the night before she went into the hospital, mom was just always such like, she's so independent, like never relied on anybody to do anything type thing. And it was like, okay, mom, you're going into the hospital tomorrow. Like, I'll get your bag together for you.
Yeah.
And she was just like, okay. And like, she laid on her bed and I just like put stuff in a bag for her. And it was just very unusual. Like that's not normally.
She didn't get up.
Like normally she would have been like up, do it. Like she just like couldn't really get up and it was like hard. And so like that night I remember was emotional. Like when we were all like, then we all were in on the bed with her, like me, you, Caroline, and my three kids, and we were just like praying for mom. And Scott and Matt, were you guys there?
I came later.
Okay. So like, you know, we were praying for her because we knew she was going into the hospital the next day for the surgery. And like, it was like emotional for sure because we just didn't like that she seemed so sick. It just felt...
Going into a major surgery.
I felt nervous. She's very weak to be going into a brain surgery. That made me feel very nervous.
Yeah.
And so she had to go in on the Tuesday, and her, so her and dad got there at like really early in the morning. She had to go through a full day of testing. She had to, she ended up sitting in the ER the entire day, which is like horrible. But Bookfar came to see her, and he was like, in nice words, like, you look terrible. Like, I, like, there's something wrong. And he said, you do have a lot of swelling in your brain, and that could be why you're feeling sick. But like, you could tell that he was like kind of at a loss. And so he was like, I'm going to pull extra blood work because maybe it's like your sodium, like something like that. So they pulled a lot of extra blood work, and then it was the next morning. So then it was Wednesday the 9th. Is that right? Wednesday the 9th. And Emily, Caroline, and I were driving into the city to be there for the surgery. Mom and dad were already there because they had spent the night. And Bookvar either called or came in early that morning, and he was like, I figured it out. Her sodium is like bottomed out. Like, she is, her sodium is so low. And like, if someone has very, very low sodium, these are all the side effects they're going to feel. They're going to feel weak. They're going to feel nauseous. They're going to be fatigued. They're going to be dizzy. They're all the things that she was feeling. And so it was like this huge sigh of relief. They started pumping her full of sodium, and they said, like, this is what it's going to be. Like, she's going to be fine. We're going to get her on a high sodium diet, X, Y, Z, yada, yada. That's what all the symptoms are. It has nothing to do with the brain. So we got there. They had already taken her back. So me, Emily, and Caroline, dad, were sitting upstairs in the waiting room. They had already taken her back. Dr. Bookvar calls dad on the phone, which is like never good when the surgeon is calling like 10 minutes after the thing was supposedly starting. And he said, you know, we didn't actually start yet. She is under. He said, but we just looked over her blood work one last time, and her alkaline phosphate, which is a liver
phosphatase,
which is a liver level, he said, is 3 times the upper limit of normal. What else is she taking? He was like, tell me anything she could have taken. And so then, of course, we're like,
what?
I don't know. Like, I'm like, she was on the metformin. She was on the this. She, you know, sometimes maybe she takes an ibuprofen. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we were like, like anything, like she takes this vitamin, like any possible thing she could have taken. We're racking our brains. And he said, with this number like this, I don't know if we can do the surgery or not. I'm going to, and he was like, but I'm going to see, let me call you back. And so then we hung up the phone, and obviously that was like really upsetting. We were like, oh no, they're not going to do the surgery. What does that mean? Like, what's going to happen? And then I don't know how long, but not that long later, we're sitting in the thing. He comes out, Dr. Bookvar comes out, slumps down in a chair, looks us in the eye. Caroline wasn't even there. She had gone to the bathroom.
It was me, you, and dad.
He looks at me, you, and dad, and he said, she has a massive mass in her abdomen.
And then he just looked at us.
And just stared at us. And we just stared at him. And no one knew what to say. And he said, does she have a history of any other kind of cancer? No.
No.
He said, like, has she ever had an abnormal, like, pap smear? Have she, like, any, no, nothing. Like,
any abnormal colonoscopy?
Yeah.
No.
No. Like, nothing. And he looked
afraid.
Bewildered.
He looked afraid.
He did. He was like,
then we were obviously afraid.
He said,
afraid.
I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
He said, because glioblastomas don't metastasize to other parts of your body. So I don't know what this is. And he said, I'm going to go figure out what I can. I'll be back.
And this is like a super positive guy too.
This is a very upbeat, warm, friendly,
every step of the way, he's like, we will defeat this. Like, we will.
Totally.
Make this work.
And so he walked away, and my teeth started chattering uncontrollably. I think like I went into shock.
Yeah, I think we all went into,
you know,
like,
what I mean? Like,
shock.
It was, this is the first time I've actually even like really
rehashed
that day. I forgot. Like, I didn't forget, but I just like blocked it, I think. And we sat there for what felt like years. Whatever.
I don't even know.
I think let's speed through the rest of the hospital stuff because it's so traumatic. Essentially, they came out.
I think that's one noticeable difference here from like with Joe, when Joe passed away, Caitlin's brother. You guys were, it was very like, like you guys emoted a lot. Like, because I think of the trauma of it.
Yeah.
There was tears and screaming and crying and, you know, whatever. there was noticeably, I think, through this entire time with your mom, it felt like everyone was in shock the entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like just there were kind of numb. Like,
I've said this a lot of times to people, and it's true. There were many days and still where I feel like my soul left my body. Yeah. I felt like I was watching my life from above.
Mm-hmm.
Like that moment in the waiting room, whatever, when he told us that, when he said she has a mass in her abdomen and stared at us, I left my body.
Yeah.
Like I, you know what I mean? Like I genuinely was in shock. Yeah. Like I, like my teeth, I remember calling Scott and I was like, I can't stop. Like I was shaking. Like I was just like, I don't know what's going on. Like it was.
Yeah.
Anyway. So then she ended up being in the hospital. That was Wednesday. I don't know. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And it was like hell. I mean,
those few days were horrendous.
Horrendous. Emily and Caroline bore the brunt more than I did because I couldn't be there as much as them because the kids, you know, whatever. And it was just horrible. I mean, it was just like one thing after the next. Like
then she had to not eat for a whole day because she needed a liver biopsy. They didn't do her liver biopsy till the end of the day.
They did it at like 6 o'clock
at night. Roommates were able to eat. So they were wheeling food into the room past
and
my mom.
And the roommates were really rude and horrible.
The roommates were horrendous. It was just like.
And she was getting sicker and sicker and
sicker. She felt horrible. I can't believe it was only 4 days.
I really can't believe
it was only 4 days because it was the longest 4 days of my life. And I can't even imagine how it was for her.
Oh, And every day it got worse. Like, so like after the surgery was trauma in and of itself because whatever, like seeing her after she had this news that they didn't do the surgery, you know, is like something I'll never forget. And then, you know, all of that. But,
so she gets home Saturday.
She got home Saturday. Oh, no. But in the hospital, we were told someone comes in at some point and says, yes, you do have a mass in your liver and it's inoperable.
Yeah.
And then like a few hours later or the next day, someone else comes in and says, oh, and by the way, there's also spots on your bones.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was just like bad news after bad news after bad news with no answers. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't even know who was in charge of our case anymore because it was like,
because we didn't know what the cancer was because the biopsy results didn't come back yet.
So then they finally did the biopsy. They finally discharge her. She comes home. So she gets home on Saturday and then we were all with her. Well, no. Whatever. The point is, she was home. We had to wait a torturous almost week. It was like till Thursday, I think, when they got the results, I want to say. Okay. I don't know. It's probably all fuzzy.
I can't remember.
The point is, at some point, I do remember because what happened was I was here. I was going there every day and I would just come home when I needed to because my sister-in-law was here taking care of the kids, which was a godsend. I came home to do the Joey Odom interview one of those days before we found out what was going on. You know what I mean? It was like before we knew what we were dealing with, when we still thought there was good news to be had.
Right.
I do the Joey Odom interview. I hang up with him. I immediately call Dad. I said, and I'm going to tell him I'm going to come over soon, you know, whatever. And Dad picked up the phone. He said, Bookvar's calling me with the biopsy results right now. I threw everything down. I got in my car. I dangerously sped to Mom and Dad's house. I run in and Dad is on the phone, on speakerphone on the deck, just him. And so then I caught the end of it basically. And just essentially Bookvar said, this is not, because there is like a very, very, very small percentage of glioblastomas that do travel to other parts of the body. They've only ever seen it like twice in their entire careers.
Mm-hmm.
But Bookvar said, this is not a glioblastoma. The biopsy came back that it is not brain cancer. It is an entirely separate cancer. And so basically like, this isn't my thing anymore. I'm going to pass you off to this other doctor. This is her name, you know, get in touch with her and she'll tell you what your options are. But he was not positive at all.
No.
He was like,
I mean, it was like, he was the guy that was treating the super aggressive brain cancer.
Yeah.
And now he's essentially saying, this is no longer the priority. Yes. So I have to hand you over.
He did say that. He said, and now her brain, because then dad asked him, so in the meantime, while we're dealing with the liver, what are we doing about the brain? And Bookvar was just kind of like, that's not the important thing right now.
Yeah.
Which was like, you can read between the lines. Like, you know what I mean? Like he was, it was just like,
if her aggressive brain cancer is not the main problem, then we have a huge,
insurmountable problem.
Yeah.
Like exactly. If someone tells you exactly what you said, Emily, if your aggressive brain cancer is not the biggest problem in your life, mm-hmm. then this is,
there's no good news to be had.
Yeah. So it's just like,
but we still had hope because we thought, how could this possibly be happening?
Exactly. Like you just, again, you just feel like this couldn't possibly, like, okay. So then you're thinking liver cancer. Okay. Can't they like remove parts of your liver? Like
that's where I was the most confused in the whole process.
I was like your liver.
Okay,
I was like,
just take it out.
Yeah. Like I was like, can't they just like remove all the cancer parts? Like, cause you don't even need your entire liver. No. Like, you know what I mean? So I was thinking like, all right, or why don't they just like blast it with chemo? Like that's what they do for people, you know? And I was just like, I don't understand what the problem is here. So then we-
All the while, mom is getting worse.
Worse and worse and worse. And like alarmingly worse every day. And
every day was a big mile, like
huge.
A milestone downward.
Every day she was a different person.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what I think was hard to like explain to people, because like people would be like, how's mom? Like I sent her a text.
Yeah.
And it was like hard to explain to people, like she doesn't even like, she can't even pick up her phone.
Yeah.
Like she's so weak and sick. Like she can't read text messages. Like she had,
like she can, but like she
kind of like,
she was no, yeah.
She was like really out of it. Like, you know what I mean?
She'd have a couple of moments each day where she maybe would wake up or whatever, but then it was right back to it.
Yes, exactly. Like she would have some moments of like, mom, you want to eat something? And like, she would be able to, and you know what I mean? Or like some people would say like, let me know when she's up for a visit. And like, of course they meant well, but it's like for us, we're like,
oh, there's no visits.
You don't understand. Like this isn't like up for a visit.
No.
Like she's not up.
Even for me, cause I was usually home, you know, with the kids. You'd come home and explain it to me. And I couldn't, I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I wasn't even, when I finally got to go see her, I was like, whoa.
Like when I said, like when I came home and I was like, we had to get a wheelchair for her. Like you were like, a wheelchair? Like I just saw her 2 days ago walking around the house.
Yeah. Cause like we had just had like a family get together, right?
Yes.
Not too long before the surgery happened, like going to the hospital for the surgery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, it was pretty normal. Like she was like in the kitchen, like
well, wasn't it Emerson's
cleaning
dedication
and
or something?
Parker's was it that
Yeah. No, exactly. On Parker's dedication was July 31st.
And she was at church.
She was at church.
Not 31st.
July 30th. It was July 30th. Yeah. Sorry. Yes. And then she was at church, like dressed cute, like all done up. You know what I mean?
Well,
like she went and picked up the sandwiches, came back to my house, spent the whole day at my house. That was July 30th.
Yeah.
And then by August,
like 15th,
she was like in a, that's weird that we both, she was like in a wheelchair.
Like couldn't get off the couch.
But it was an unbelievable thing to explain to people.
So then we were waiting for this other doctor appointment on the 18th.
Yes.
But in the midst of that, like you said, it was the longest 4 days of your life. Every day felt like, it felt
an
like
eternity.
We were in it forever. But then you look and be like, what do you mean it's August 15th? Like, how could it happen that quickly?
No.
Right?
Yes.
It's so bizarre, the whole time frame.
So then August 18th arrived.
She was supposed to go in and meet with this doctor that Dr. Bookvar told us to meet with. We reached out and said, like, she's too weak to get to the city. Is it possible to do a Zoom? She said, yes, absolutely. We did a Zoom where it was all of us on there. And I have to speed through
this.
Essentially, she said, there is nothing that you can do. I really thought that she was going to give us the option. She was going to say you could do chemo or you can just make yourself comfortable. But if you do the chemo, it's going to be really hard on you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought the meeting was.
Yeah.
That was not what the meeting was. The meeting was not just like, is chemo not going to help you? No one would give you chemo because that would be inhumane.
Yeah.
You are too sick. She said you need to enjoy the time that you have with your family. And I don't think that it will be long is what she said. And she was very sweet. She was very kind.
Yeah, she was very nice.
She was so kind, this woman. But she said, There is nothing that you can do. There is no second opinion that will matter.
And she was right.
You don't have long. You should enjoy the time that you have.
Her cancer was so extensive.
She said it's in your blood. It's on your bones. Everywhere. It is everywhere. There's nothing that you can do. And like in that meeting, mom was so sick at that point. She couldn't stay awake through the whole Zoom.
She was falling asleep.
She was falling asleep during the Zoom meeting, which is the most important Zoom call of your entire life, right?
Yeah.
And that's how sick she was, that she couldn't even stay awake. And I mean, that was like, I don't know. I could qualify a lot of these days as the darkest day of my life. That's for sure up there. Yeah. I mean, that was a really, really horrendously horrible, traumatic.
Well, that was the last little bit of hope being stripped
away.
There was
like, exactly. You know? Like each, we're not stupid. It's not like we thought she was going to like bounce out of bed or something.
No.
But of course, when you're with someone that you love, you are holding on to any possible shred that there is something that can be done. Mm-hmm. And when someone looks in your eye and says, there is absolutely nothing left.
Right.
There is no experimental thing.
Yeah.
There is nothing.
That's just all hope is gone. It's gone.
It's over. It's the most hopeless, you know.
Yeah.
In that call, like you said, we were looking for an option.
Something.
And I'm so glad Caitlin asked, okay, so if we decide to go the chemo route.
Susie told me to ask that.
And, you know, like, what would that be like? And she was so sweet.
She was so sweet.
Man, she was. Like, yeah. She was.
To be that
nice
person.
Dr. Wozni, yes.
News all
she
the time,
deserves a lot of credit. She had wonderful bedside manner. She did.
Such a gift. But she just looked back and said, I wouldn't give her a chemo.
She goes,
I
no, I'm sorry. Like, you can't go the chemo route.
And that's when it hit me that, like, oh, it really is.
It's done.
It's over.
And I think, too, for your mom, like you said, she couldn't even stay awake through that whole phone call. But I think there was something, too, that she was, like, trying to fight.
Yeah.
But after that call,
she let go.
She was like, okay, I understand, you know, and
her body let go.
Her body let go, for sure. And so that was on
18th, Tuesday, Tuesday the 18th.
And she died
August 27th.
The 27th. So
it was just rapid.
You can imagine the horrifying week and a half that was.
It was.
We can't go into detail.
Are there any parts that you want to share from that week? I remember the elders came over and prayed.
Elders came over and prayed.
Was that
after Wozni or before Wozni?
I think it was before.
No, that was before. It was the Saturday before.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, of course. Honestly, something that. Well, you know what? I'm going to skip that for now. But anyway, for mom's sake, I don't know that we'll ever like, and for our own sake and for dad and for everything, I don't know that we'll ever like publicly like go into detail about those last week and a half. It was,
you can imagine,
but listen, I want to be clear about something. And I said this at her funeral. I don't wish it away in the sense that I have a lot of friends that lost their parents quickly.
Suddenly.
They didn't know. And they say, I had one friend in particular, and she said, my dad got sick and I thought he was going to bounce back like he always did. And he didn't. And I didn't get to say what I wish I could have said. And she said, don't miss it. I missed it. I don't want you to miss it. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful for that. I'm thankful that people said that to us. And I'm thankful that we had that knowledge and we did get to say what we needed to say to her. I mean, if I had 1,000 years, I couldn't have said everything I wanted to say. But the point is, we said a lot. We said a lot of important things. And I know she heard us and I know she responded. And my kids got to come and be with her. And she knew that they were there. And that's very special. It's very, very special. And I'm thankful for that. And I will be thankful for that until the day that I die, that we had that time.
And what a blessing for her.
Yeah.
As to like, not a blessing.
No,
like,
but yeah.
But this is like, probably the most significant thing that will happen in your life.
Yeah.
In all of our lives. Like it's all going to happen to us, but she got to experience it with her kids and her family, just like caring for her
24/7
and pouring love onto her and just sharing every little bit of moment together. And that is just like, when my time comes, it's like, I hope that there's some element of like getting to
say goodbye.
Have that.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course. We said a million times, like, we were thankful that we were able to take care of
that
her.
That we were the ones to be able to take care of her
and we would have done it forever, but we're glad for her sake that
it didn't last that long. Yeah.
You guys were incredible.
It'll never be enough though.
No.
For what she did for us for her whole life.
But I will say though, like, honestly, like, in those days that we were taking care of her, like, me, you, and Caroline and Dad, like, the way that we, like,
we just clung to each other.
Yeah, like, the support that we had for each other and the way that we also even, like, me, you, and Caroline especially, like, when we would be helping mom do certain things or, like, when there was, like, meds to be dispensed, the way it was just understood, like, you're doing this and I'm doing this and you're doing this and we had it down. Like, it was just, like, we were like an organism. You know what I mean?
There was so much beauty in those moments, which is so weird to say, but you know, when she first went down with the glio and we all just huddled together in one house.
Yeah.
And like, there was so much beauty in those moments of like, it drew us together. Right. And then again, at the end, drew us together, and no one would ever say, wow, she's such a lucky woman for the way she went out. Like,
of
no,
course not.
But what Matt's saying too, you know, I was sitting there watching and there was something inside of me going, man, we're all going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to have our last days surrounded by the people that we love.
Yeah.
Getting to tell us the things that they love. Like, again, there's so much beauty in that, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I could talk forever about that and still not even understand it. But the other part that, just been really proud of your dad.
Oh,
me too.
He's just been such a, I don't want to say he's been a rock, you know, everyone always says that, you know, and he has been, but he's just handled it so inspiringly.
Yeah. Oh, it's like I don't know. Like, it's just I think it's been unreal to watch, honestly. Yeah. It's just like, it's been such a, I don't know, different side of him, like, is just coming out through this. And it's just like, he is, I don't know, handling it. Like, I don't want to say well.
But no, like, he's completely broken and devastated, but he's been there for us somehow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, even though he's
somehow still able to be our dad.
Yes. Oh, like, he's still like, it's not like, it's like, this man is a puddle on the floor that we're dragging around. Like, he's still there for us.
Yeah, he's like, I'm still dad.
Yeah. He's just, in the end. Yes.
Like, he was so wonderful for her.
And you know, she said that to me. And and I think that's like a beautiful thing that she was able to verbalize that. Like, she said that to me at the end. Your dad has been so amazing. Like, this whole time that I've been feeling sick, dad has been so, so amazing. Big, you know, time. And like, that's, you know, such a gift. But it's crazy because I am so thankful for that last few weeks with her. And I'm so thankful we got to take care of her and all the things that were said and all that stuff. And at the same time, I wish I could erase the month of August from my brain, never to be thought of again. Because I, like, for sure, like when I walk into mom and dad's house now, like, we were just there for dinner and I smell it. Like, the smell of their house, you know what I mean? Which is a lovely smell. I feel sick. It makes me sick because I see her in the hospital bed.
She died in their house.
She died there. And it's just, I just feel like there's just like a lot of trauma with that. Obviously, people that are listening to this, if you've ever like been with someone in their final days, like, you understand, like, it's, I don't know. It's just a lot.
It's just an out of body experience. It's an out of body. You feel like it's not actually happening. And then when it happens, it's just.
it's like a bizarre, just like silence. It just like, it just like happened.
And it was just like strange because like she would have these moments of clarity that were like crazy. And it was still so her, because here's the thing. You're talking about a woman who had brain cancer. And then also, okay. One of the hospice nurses, her name is Donna, and she's actually like a friend of our, her mom. Very and Donna lovely. Was like, so
amazing.
Sweet. So amazing. Like, she sat there for forever, helped us, answered all of our questions. She was seriously like, I love her. She explained, which I hadn't thought of before. She was like, you have to remember also like her liver, like your liver filters toxins in your body. And if her liver isn't working, then like toxins are building up like in her body and like also in her brain. So like she might at times like say something that's like
strange.
Like, you know what I mean? Like she doesn't exactly know what's going on. So like that was helpful to hear that. But then still though, mom did have these very like, okay. On the day, what was the day that we had the call? Was it a Tuesday?
Tuesday the 18th.
Tuesday the 18th. On Wednesday the 19th, Jace had her first soccer practice of her new travel team. And Jace came over that day. And she was just like cuddling with mom and like whatever. And then I was like, okay, like I'm like whispering to mom and you know, mom's in and out at this point. And I was like, we're going to take Jace to her soccer game, mom, but I'll to her soccer practice, but I'll come back. And mom like opened her. She didn't even really open her eyes. She just kind of like squinted a little. And then she said, you probably should take her earrings out.
Like, could you imagine?
And that, and it was, it, I laughed. I started laughing because it was like mom, that was like, mom was so like, you know, like moms harp on about certain things. Like that was like always her thing. Yeah. It was like, don't forget to take out your earrings. Like her earrings, the earrings, your earrings, your earrings. And I was like, I cannot believe she's saying this right now. Like, you know what I mean? Like I was like, okay, mom. And then it was like, I was gone. And then I came back hours later because it was the longest flipping practice of my life. And then I like went home, took a shower. I came back and I just, mom was asleep and I just whispered like, I'm back, mom. And I thought that she would probably not realize like that I was even gone. Like, you know what I mean? And she just goes, how'd she do? I said, she did so good. And she said, oh, I knew it. And it's just so, you know, like, so it's like up until the end.
If that doesn't show you who she was at her core, like even when her body shuts down, she's still like thinking about
asking
other people.
Asking about Jace's soccer practice. Like, you know what I mean?
When
like,
I'm in that state, I'm going to like wake up and be like, I said, clean up your room.
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
She's like looking after her. Like you told that story at the funeral, like the Tums, you know, the Tums are upstairs, right? She's just to the very end.
For people who don't know, at the funeral, I shared a story about how like at like in her final days, we were all sitting around in the living room and I was like, I have such bad heartburn. And Caroline got up to get me the Tums out of the kitchen and she couldn't find them. And mom, like in her sleep, heard this whole like kerfuffle happening. And she was whispered, Tums are upstairs. And I was like,
and sure enough, there they were.
OMG. Like she's legitimately dying and taking care of my heartburn. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Like that's
to the
like
very end.
To the very end.
That's our mom.
I said to dad, like, I feel like I'm a lazy person because mom did everything like that for me. Like I would just be like, I don't know how to do that. Like if I,
no, you
anything
said,
for my
you
kids.
You said your mom made you lazy. You blamed your mom.
Yeah, you're right. I should. But I'm like, literally if my kids like clothing got a little tear in it, like I'd be like, oh, Nonny will just like sew it. Like, I'm like, I'm not going to learn to sew. Like that's stupid. You know what I mean? Like I just, anything, if they had an art project, Nonny will do it. You know what I mean? Like I was just like, and she did, you know, anyway. So I don't know. Is that the end of the story? Basically, then she passed away Sunday morning. We were all with her.
It was like 4:30.
4:29. We had been getting up every 2 hours and giving her morphine, but she couldn't even really swallow at the end. So it was like people who've done this for other people know, like you kind of put it in their cheek and let it absorb through their gums. It's just like, it was horrible.
It was.
By the end, she was not having any lucid moments.
I think it was like the last two days.
I think the last 48 hours, like Saturday.
I had one moment with her on Saturday.
Oh, you did?
A very brief moment. Oh, everybody was asleep and I was sitting next to her just like
being
somebody had
the
to keep watch.
Yeah.
Because she needed shifting a lot because she would like wake up for really brief moments and be in pain and whatever. And she started to shift and she just like barely opened up her eyes a little bit. And so I was like, oh, hi, mom. And I like waved to her.
Yeah.
And she like really gently like lifted her hand up, mm. waved to me, and then went back to sleep. And that was, but like,
yeah.
she put the energy into waving back
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
And that was Saturday at like, I want to say like 3 p.m. So yeah, we were like really getting down to the end.
12 hours before she died,
yeah.
probably.
Yeah.
And even in that, yeah, I mean, just like, you know, and then you wonder like if some stuff's in your head or not or whatever. But I remember on that last day in the middle of the night. So I got up for the midnight shift of the morphine and then she died at 4 a.m. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. I did the midnight shift and it was just, it was easy at the end by that point. Yeah. We stopped shifting her and I was just doing, and I whispered to her like, I love you, mom. We love you so much. And I don't know if it's in my head. But like her breathing changed for a second, mm-hmm. like as if she was trying to say
like
something.
Like it almost sounded like syncopated
like
or
she,
something.
Like she was yeah. like, and she was like kind of yeah. like she was saying something.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? And I just like squeezed her hand like, I'm just going to take that as like she yeah. was, she heard me and she was trying to say, I love you back or whatever. You know what I mean? But so, okay. Then a week later we had the funeral, all of that. So I think that's the story and people are maybe wondering how we are. I mean, great.
Fantastic.
We're great. No, this has been a really hard thing for me because I've learned a lot about myself in the last few weeks. Now, granted, we've been through a tragedy before. Okay. Like Joe died 9 years ago.
Mm.
So like we've done this before. It's obviously different when it's your mom. It's obviously different when it's a decade later, like things about you have changed. Like yeah. I wasn't a mother when Joe died, all those yeah. things. You weren't even married, Emily. Like, yeah. you know, it's, you're different. But something that has become very, very apparently clear to me through this whole thing with mom is that, you know, a lot of people are always like, I wear my heart on my sleeve. Like, mm. I just like, I can't help it. Like, you can just read my emotions all over my face. And, you know, I guess like, I always thought I was like that.
Mm.
And through this whole thing, it has become so clear to me that I do not wear my emotions on my sleeve.
No.
And I very much can compartmentalize when I have to and mm-hmm. turn it on and turn it off. And so like, what I mean is like, my mom died on Sunday morning. I went to Emerson's preschool orientation for parents on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell, like, some people were like, oh my, hi, are you? Like, and I'm like, yeah, no. And you know, people are so kind. I'm so yeah. sorry. Let me give you a hug, da, da, da. And I'm like, thank you so much. And I'm not crying.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm here to do this thing for my kid. You know what I
yeah.
mean? And like, I can lock it up for an hour and do this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I can get it together, take a shower, slap a little makeup on, get in my car, go there, smile, say hi to everybody. And it's not fake.
No.
It's not like I'm like, I hate these people. No, like I'm like, I can talk to people and then I go home and I break down at my home. Do you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
I'm at the soccer field. Like, a few days after she died, the girls started school. So it's like everything became very busy. Like I'm yeah. doing preschool drop off and school drop off and soccer and back to school night. You know, I was at back to school night last week and I almost feel self-conscious at times because mm-hmm. it's like people see me at back to school night and they're like, I'm so sorry about your mom. And I'm yeah. like, thank you so much. And then I feel like they expect me to cry right now, but I'm not going to cry right
no,
now because I'm like no. out at a public place and if, like, that's not how I am.
Yeah. There's a wall you have to put up because if that wall comes down, there's no putting it back up again.
Right.
Do you
like,
know what
I'm not
I mean?
Gonna
like,
start sobbing.
I'm not gonna have a full on breakdown
in the cafeteria
exactly.
here at the
work.
Public school.
Yeah.
yeah. Like you're going back to your first day at work. You're not gonna be like on the floor
no.
of the staff room.
I'm
like
gonna
you're just
slap a smile on or slap not a crying face on.
Right.
And I'm gonna do my job and then I'm gonna go home and then I'm gonna fall apart.
And it's not fake. Like
no.
that's not, it's not like you're like, I'm really fake with my coworkers. You're not fake. You're just like doing what you have to do.
Exactly.
But I think yes, but also this one has been different. So
yeah,
like with Joe, you guys weren't able to get back that quickly, you know, no. like that you were crying. I think
yeah.
there's different factors. And even
flow,
through this, we've
yeah.
heard from so many people that have lost, you know, how many friends do we have that have lost their parents, right? Like
yeah.
so mm-hmm. many, or siblings or whatever. So the grief stages are totally different for everyone, but this one, you guys have been grieving your mom for two years.
Yeah, it's true.
And
it's
true.
It was a shock, but also not a shock.
Yeah.
And so I think that's partially why too. It feels so confusing, right? Yeah. It's like we just suddenly lost her, but we've been slowly losing her for a long
time from something else, and she ended up dying.
I mean, this was an emotional battle. Yeah. Right. But it was a psychological battle too. So, you know, for me, one of the things that I saw shift that I'm still wrestling with in my head was like, I'll talk about our prayers, 'cause that's a good way to gauge it. Like, our prayers went from, you know, I pray that she's healed, that this goes away, that God will, you know, take this away, you know, whatever. And then at some point, once we got that news and saw her suffering, our prayers shifted to, okay, God, please don't let her suffer. Take her quickly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like, that is a psychological, just, I don't even know how to handle that. But that shift did something, I think, I would say in like our family, like you started to see that where people were, I don't know, there was this like holding on for so long and then having to like actually push and go, all right, God, please take her home quickly.
Yeah.
Like there was a healing, I don't know if it's a healing in that or acceptance or what, but it psychologically shifted the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it did.
All that to say, like whether it's a trauma or whether it's a long-term thing or if it's a sibling or a parent or a friend, if you have family with you, if you have, I don't know, other things going on in life, like all of that is going to affect the way that you react. And I think the biggest thing to this is I watch you guys going, you know, people are saying hi and I'm like totally normal. Do they think I don't love my mom?
It's
like,
no,
nobody thinks that. Not for nobody a second. Nobody thinks that. I feel like
I have like a good night with my friends. Like we went, you know,
feel remorseful.
Yeah, we had a good night.
And then I was like,
I
laughed and was totally normal.
Yeah.
They probably think I'm psychotic.
Right. No. They're probably like, wow, what an insensitive. And it's like,
but I think most people get it. I think most people realize. And again, that hit me first at Joe's funeral when we're in the receiving line and somebody said something funny. We started laughing and I thought, how can I be laughing right now?
Right. Yeah. At a funeral.
But it's part of the process. Yeah. Right? It is.
And it's also like, I think that that's also like a trauma response. Like I really do feel too. Like when you are like having such intense emotions, you have all of the intense emotions.
Yes. Yeah.
You're intensely sad and grieving. And then like someone will say something and you'll laugh like really hard. Like, and you're like, gosh, that was inappropriate how hard I laughed. But it's like all of your emotions are at a 10.
I feel like it's all the fences that we put all around our emotions are just gone. So it's like, whatever happens now, we're just
you're just like acting like a freak.
Also our family, that's how we respond to pain is like, let's make a joke. Let's laugh.
We've also really, really all dug deep into the dark humor. Yes. Like that's really been working for
us. My favorite humor.
Yeah. So we've just been like making dark jokes. But you know, like I think a really good example was today at the soccer game. Today at the soccer field was like, this is our family now. So basically it's like Emerson had her first soccer game. So it's me and Scott, my dad, Emily, Matt, Caroline, Hannah. We're all sitting on the sidelines. Not everybody there knows that mom just died, but some people do. And so I'm sure some people were like looking at us and dad kind of like, oh man, this poor man. Like, you know, whatever. We're laughing. We're cheering. Mm-hmm. We're acting stupid. Like we had a great time. You know what I mean? Like it was so nice. Like we're like yucking it up for Emerson, you know? And then like right at the end, they handed out gummies and it was the exact brand. That, remember, that was the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Anytime my mom ever came over, she brought gummies for Emerson. And that was a thing. Fruit snacks. And Emerson called them gummies. And so she, Nani, you brought me gummies? Nani, you got my gummies? That was always a thing. And so it was the brand that my mom would bring. And so Emerson got them and she went, and she was talking to her new friend, Harper. And she was like, Harper, my Nani brings me these. My Nani brings me these gummies. These are the gummies that my Nani brings me. And she said, my Nani's in heaven now, but she always brings me these gummies. And it, like, and so it's like when we heard her say that, all of us just started crying, like behind our sunglasses. It's not like we were like falling on the ground wailing. Yeah. You know what I mean? But we all get choked up and emotional behind our sunglasses and we're, you know, low key about it. And then we go on. You know what I mean?
Start
and
it's
like,
again.
Exactly. And it's like, this is what our family is now. This is what it is. We go to a soccer game, we act normal, we do normal things, and then something smacks you in the face and it's and it knocks you down a little bit. You know what I mean? But it's like something I keep, a phrase I keep saying over and over and over. Remember I had on this podcast, John Onwuchekwa, and his brother passed away and his book was called We Go On.
Mm.
And that's, I've been saying that all week. Just, you just go on. You don't move on.
No.
You don't get over it. But you go on. And that's what we're doing. We go on. We're going on because what other choice do we have?
Yeah.
We have kids. We have fit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're just going on.
Well, there was like a weird, it's a weird thing that happens anytime, you know, there's tragedy or someone passes in your family. That's like, it is the most significant thing that is happening in all of the world for, for our family.
Yeah.
But it's like, you like go drive around and like life's just continuing on.
Because
it's just like, it almost feels like this thing that is like making our world stop should make the whole world stop.
It's almost offensive.
Yeah.
Like you're like, what are you doing at the park?
Yeah. Why? Yeah. How dare you? But it's just like, no, life just keeps happening.
Yeah.
And like, even with, you know, during the hospice period, it was so intense.
Yeah.
And like, it was highly emotional. We were there 24/7, sleeping there, taking care, you know, the whole thing. After she passed, it was like, within 2 days I was back at work. Cause I was just like,
you have to go back.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, that's over.
Yes.
And now life continues. So I go to work.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay.
Yeah.
We're just going on.
Yes. Like, you just go on because what else is there to do?
And it's so hard because like, that's what she would want.
Of course.
She would want you to, but then there's so much, and there's going to be weeks, I'm sure. Like there's days and times where we start crying and then we laugh, you know, whatever. Yeah. But there's going to be weeks where you're just floored.
Yeah.
And you like can't function. And like, that's okay too. You know, I just think, keep thinking over and over, especially because, you know, Caitlin, you have so many friends that have experienced loss, right?
I thought you were just like, saying I have so many friends. I was like, I'm so popular.
No. Thank you. Both of your friends have. And just like how different people process and go through it. You know, I was talking with our neighbor yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
Who lost his wife, what, a year ago?
You know what's so crazy? It really is. It's so unifying. Though when you know, so it's like our neighbor Dave, we've lived here next to him for over 3 years, and his wife died like a year after we moved in, and it was so sweet because he knew that mom was sick, but you know, whatever. And so when I went up to him like 2 weeks ago and I said, Dave, I just want to tell you like mom died, and he was like, sit down. And we sat down and he was like, so tell me, because he had been through the end with his wife, he was like, how was it with hospice? How was it? So did you get her on the morphine? Like he had like, cause he's been there.
He had like insider knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. And it felt very unifying with, you know what I mean? Like it was like, he understands so well, you know what I mean? And I just think of, so my friend Jen, like her dad died, you know, of cancer, and she was with him at the end. You know what I mean? And it's like, she's been a huge source of encouragement and strength for me just because she understands. You know what I mean? She's just like, I've been
John
there.
John and Sharon.
John and Sharon, Matt's sister, Sharon, her husband, Jonathan, who's, they're our best friends. We began the summer at John's mom's funeral.
Kicked like, off the summer.
That's how we kicked off the summer. And then we ended the summer at my mom's funeral. And we were all like Amanda, Rob, Sharon, John, like looking at each other like,
what just happened?
What is life? What is this? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how is this? You know? And it's like, my friend Carrie just lost her mom recently. Yeah. Like, just like, and like people that have been able to reach out to me, like friends of mine that have lost a parent in a similar type of way. You know what I mean? Like they, you know, Tara lost her mom of a glio, you know? And it's like people being able to see you and really see your pain and understand is something that's very special. You know, it is very special. And I'm glad, I mean, I'm not glad, but it's like, am I happy that we'll be able to provide that support for other people moving forward in our life? Yeah, sure. I mean, would I trade like not having this empathy that I can now have and I have my mom back. Yeah, obviously I'd rather have my mom here. Obviously. But I just mean like for these crappy set of circumstances, if this means that we can be empathetic and encouraging and uplifting to people in the future, I guess that's good. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And I think it's even more, it's like, it's a way of honoring your mom and taking, you know, yeah. I think even of four glioblastomas, like what she did and the time that she made it is going to help so many more people down the line. She had just spoken at an event about it, right? Like, you know, so it's, I think taking it and saying, what can we do with this now? Like, yeah, none of us would trade this for, you know, would take that for anything, obviously, but now that it's happened or that this is your story, what do you do with that? And how do you, you know, Dave, our neighbor, was just saying this. He was saying, you know, like at any point now, you can choose whatever thoughts, you know, his daughter wasn't married yet. And he said, you know, I can choose to think like, okay, she's not going to be at my daughter's wedding. And he said, but I have to realize I'm the one that made that thought. And so I have to take it captive, mourn that, and then move on and start to think, okay, but how can I honor her? What am I going to do? And I'm like, people like that. I mean, it just, it's unbelievable how much they get it having been through it. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, just the support, you know, I one thing I've been thinking about so much is just, you know, a lot of people go through stuff like this without a lot of support.
Yeah.
And that breaks my heart.
You know? Oh yeah.
That just breaks my heart.
Cause most people probably.
Yeah. You know, and because we're involved in churches, your dad, you know, the pastor at that church and, you know, like different things, like we were blessed with a lot of amazing support.
Yeah. That's something that I did want to take a little bit of time. I know that we've been talking, we were like, this is going to be a quick little episode and this is like fourth hour. The support and help that we've gotten from people is unbelievable. I had gifts show up, like very thoughtful gifts, like from people that I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I can't believe that you even cared that much about this, that you thought to like pick out this thoughtful thing to help me remember my mom or to help me talk to my kids about it or whatever. And like found my address and sent this to me. Like, are you that it? I am blown away by that.
Cards. Like how many people just dropped a card in the mail?
Neighbors like, saying, I'm here for you. If you need me to take your children, I will do that. And I'm like, I was like, I'm not this nice of a person. I don't do this for other people. Like, I hate myself. Like, literally, like, the conviction I have for people, like, how kind they were. But I really need to take a minute, though. The two people in our life that changed the whole thing for me that I could never, ever, ever, ever possibly repay are Scott's two sisters, Kim and Tyann. People, a lot of my friends like know this now because so many of my friends kept reaching out to me and saying like, do you need me to take your kids? Do you need me to take your kids? And for literally 3 solid weeks, I said, no, we're good. No, we're good. Because what happened was after we found out everything in the hospital, a few days later, Kim and my nephew Kale came out, stayed for a full week, handled my kids. Scott was able to work. I was at my mom's basically 24 hours a day, and Kim and Kale played with, it was still summer break. They played with them. They took them places. They did things with them. I didn't know what my kids were eating. I didn't care. I didn't know when they were going to bed or what they were doing. I didn't care. I just knew that they were being loved and cared for and doing things and whatever was happening. I would run back and forth and like feed the baby and whatever, you know what I mean? And like, that was that. Then they left. Tyann and Garrett came out and did the same exact thing. And like, with the kids, constantly stocking my fridge, baking things, cooking things, doing things. Then Tyann and Garrett had to leave. Kim came back out. And then Kim also
from
like
Colorado.
The day of the from Colorado. Yeah, yeah. Hello. For people who don't know, this isn't like they came around the block.
No.
They
like flew out on a plane.
And then even on the day of the funeral, Kim made breakfast for all of us.
Yep.
Kim made these little
gift packages
of tissues and mints. Yeah. And you know, freaking good thing I had those mints because we're in the receiving line.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, my breath, like, thank God.
I downed a whole box of those Tic Tacs.
I had a whole thing of those Tic Tacs because I was like, this is very important. Like, we're like talking to people people get up in your face. People are like almost kissing you on the lips.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my gosh, my breath. Like,
all
legitimately.
All personal space is gone.
No personal space. Honestly, if could you imagine if like this, it was during like a COVID outbreak? That would have been like a, what do they call those?
No.
Super spreader?
A super spreader event. Well, that absolutely would have been a super spreader event. Yeah. We wouldn't have done it. But
I was
the point
actually
is,
sick at the funeral.
Yeah, Matt was actually ill. But truly, Kim and Tyann.
They were so amazing. I couldn't,
and like, not just for me, but then for the family.
Our entire
like
family.
My dad was like, what would we have done without them? Because then Caitlin couldn't have been here. I like for people who don't know, I have a 6-month-old. Like I can't just like, and 2 other children too. Like I can't just be like, bye. I'm just going to be at my parents 24/7. Yeah. Scott, I guess you're going to lose your job because you have to have the kids. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's not a small thing to have a 6-year-old, a 4-year-old and a 6-month-old 24 hours a day. And I was able to, I was sleeping at my parents' house. I was there all like, they handled everything. And I can't even imagine how I would feel right now if I were sitting here saying I wasn't there that much at the end because I couldn't be because I had a baby.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine how I would feel. And the fact that I am able to, without any, anything, say like I was there with my mom all the time, just as much as my sisters were.
Yeah.
Like that is a gift I could never, ever, ever repay.
That's the gift. That's
I mean, like truly.
Truly. And it was a gift to all of us because you were there for us too. It's not like you, I mean,
we were able to
obviously
have each other.
You
yeah,
were there for mom and, but
no, that we were able to be together, you know,
I felt bad. Cause but when they first came out, we still didn't know what was going on. Right. And so, you know, to have them come out, you know, in the
it was like, well, what if things end up being fine? And if, this was an unnecessary trip.
But they didn't care. They just didn't wanted care. To be here and help. And it really was. It was a game changer. It reminds me too of, you know, the day we heard Joe passed away.
Yeah.
You and I were in a puddle on the floor, and all of a sudden we got a phone call. Hey, we bought it. We bought plane tickets for you for tonight. We're on your way.
Yeah.
We're on our way. We're gonna take you to the airport. And we were there the next morning. We
were you were in New Jersey.
I remember it. Like I remember
the moment you walked in.
Getting a call.
Same.
Really?
Yeah.
That is so weird. I don't know if I remember it. I think I've maybe blocked it.
Mm.
I just, the fact that they did that, whatever.
Yeah.
The point
is.
They
could go on and on.
Yeah. They've just been.
Yes. They're good at that stuff. But for sure.
I mean, that's.
They're very, yes.
That's my, they've been
but anyway.
My whole life for me. So, you know, but yeah, just incredibly.
Yeah.
But incredibly Emily, grateful. Like your mother-in-law came, picked up your animals.
Oh.
Like, you know what I mean? So that, because that would have been a whole thing for you to be like, oh, I got to go walk the dog. I got to go. You didn't have to think about one thing at your house.
No.
You know what I mean? Like she came, took the dog away. It wasn't a problem. She had her. You know what I mean? Like the, like people. Caroline's job, like even like Hannah would come and drive. Like Caroline left her apartment in like a fury to come back here. She didn't have anything with her. Hannah, our cousin slash her roommate, like just would drive whatever up to her an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like here's your underwear, like whatever you need, you know, it's just like people just dropped everything to be there.
Yeah.
For us in however way we needed them to be. You know
and
what I
still
mean?
Are in a lot of ways.
And still are. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, people would send meals or paper plates.
Oh
you know,
my
anything.
Gosh.
No,
just,
truly.
Just to help. And it's, you know, like I almost want to take an entire podcast just to
thank people.
Say every person, you know, and what they did. And obviously we could never, you know, thank them. But, you know, it does inspire like, okay, you know, like, okay, what can we do with this? Can we be there with people?
Absolutely.
You know, as they
to walk with
it?
People better because the, I mean, beyond.
Yeah. And it does give you hope too for just humanity.
Humanity.
Like, in the midst of all the bad things that happen, you see stuff like this where you're like, people are so good.
Yeah.
And how many, you know, the people that came to the funeral, like.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even know where to start
I'll never get
on
over
that.
It.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You know,
goodness,
in my life. Funerals that will I mean, obviously, of course, for me, but I just mean like services, Sago's service, Scott's best friend. That was a beautiful, overwhelming, unbelievable experience.
Mm-hmm.
Joe's funeral, mom's funeral, like just unbelievable, the outpouring of love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, horrible. Wish we didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I almost feel bad because, again, I think about how many people go through things.
Mm-hmm. And don't have an outpouring of love.
Support. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah,
and
like it's,
I don't know. I think of the strength they must have and, you know, just different things like that. But, you know, it does give you hope, you know, helps you want to do it better, I think.
Yeah, because you realize how even the tiniest little bit of something from somebody else, like mm-hmm. what it means.
Yeah.
Like it means a lot.
Totally.
Even if it seems like it's insignificant, so.
Mm-hmm. So to get a little logistical here, not that I'm not like closing it, but just to get a little logistical, like, wait, did I cut you off?
No.
Oh. No.
What?
Like, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Luckily, we have Caitlin.
Out of breath.
Luckily, yes. You're welcome.
Who always knows what to say.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, so the podcast, we're not shutting it down. We're still doing it. But it's just so, it's just so wild to me. Do you know that we launched our first episode weeks before mom originally, before they found the brain tumor? Mm-hmm. So, like, this podcast started, and a few weeks later, we found out she had brain cancer. So the entire life of this podcast has been walking this journey with mom. Yep. And there's been a lot of like, and then throughout it, I had like the worst pregnancy of my life and then a newborn. You know what I mean? Like just like a lot of seasons where it was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. And like any normal person, I think would have just shut the thing down. Cause like podcasts are a lot of work, newsflash. Mm-hmm. And like, life the last few years of having this podcast, like not thriving, like I wouldn't say it's our best. Like, you know what I mean? Like this 2.5 years with mom being sick and whatever. And somehow though we've done this. And I think for all of us, it's been like a bright spot, healing thing, whatever. So.
This is my therapy.
Me too, right? Who needs therapy? No, I'm kidding. Go to therapy.
Yeah.
We're not licensed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yikes. Don't listen to us. No. But for some reason, we are still here. You know what I mean? And mom loved the podcast. She especially loved Swepisodes, but she also loved the interviews. And like, of course, we're going to keep it going for her, in her honor. Now, that being said, might it be a little choppy moving forward for a few months? Yeah, it might be. Because you know what? Like a podcast with interviews and stuff, it takes like grind. And I don't have grind in me right now. I have like can barely do the bare minimum of what I have to do to like keep my 3 children and myself alive from sun up to sundown. You know what I mean? Like I don't have a lot of extra bandwidth. So like, I don't know. Like I'm going to probably have weeks where I have bursts of energy and I like schedule interviews and like I'm doing really good. And then I'm probably going to have seasons where I'm like, I literally cannot do this. Like I can't function. I can't talk to a person. You know what I mean? And I'm just going to like ask for grace from the listeners. Don't give up on us.
I'm going to say it publicly here. Caitlin panics if she thinks that she's not going to have an episode 1 week or something, whatever, like full on panic attack.
How many times did I, Matthew, say, new plan? Yeah. No, wait, other new plan.
That's why, like, I'm sort of glad I just let it sit for a moment. Because, like, because some part of it was, like, I didn't edit
She's
what you sent to me.
I'm
like, maybe I'll just wait anyway.
And then I was like, can you delete that thing?
Don't post that. Don't post. Yeah. And so I'm just going to, like, we reserve the right. There might be a couple weeks we don't have a podcast.
Yeah, sure.
And that's just, cool. Yes, don't have
exactly,
an episode.
Exactly.
And then back to what you're saying, you know, when we started this thing, I wasn't as familiar with podcasts as you were. And I felt like this thing needs to be polished. Like we got to get our stuff together and, you know, hide all the you know, negative stuff or the bad stuff, make it look like we're professionals, whatever. And I think the beautiful part has been that this has been going on while our life is a mess.
Yeah.
Like that's part of what makes
and
it.
And we've just been put it all out there. Yeah. Like, you know, this is what's going on.
Yeah. And it is, it's therapy and it's fun and it's
totally,
I don't know, whatever. So maybe we'll just keep it that way, but
yeah. So that's the pod moving forward. Thank you for your support all this time to all the people, and just keep sticking with us. Even if we have, you know, choppy weeks and whatever, I don't know what else is there to say, guys.
Not much.
Good. Emily, the other day we were on the phone and I'm like, you know, it's like we stupidly, me, Emily, Caroline, and Dad say things like, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
And it's like, bad, how are you? Like, you know what I mean? It's like you're just feeling the space. And so Emily and I were just talking on the phone while she was driving to work. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, whatever. And it was just kind of like dead silent. Mm-hmm. And then Emily was like, okay, well, off I go to another fun-filled day of living. I'll talk to you later. And I was just like,
that's it.
Sad and true. And, you know, it just
one
is.
One day at a time, I
one
guess.
One day at a time. Yeah. And we have each other, thank God.
Yeah.
You know? And.
To mom.
To mom.
To mom.
We love you, mom.
We love you.